Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And we're here with Brian Estes and Don McPherson. Gentlemen, thank you for being on the show.
It's good to be here, David.
Thank you for having us.
Well, no, it's a pleasure. Well, you know, you guys are out in Minnesota, correct?
We are. We're holding it down in the land of 10,000 lakes and enjoying our summer, absolutely.
Well, there's no question it was a fabulous summer. Well, let's talk a little bit about, if we can, leadership culture and engagement, because I think that's a great topic, and it's something that I know that both of you talk a lot about. Ryan, if you could kick it off for us and kind of tell me what you think that topic means.
Well, Don and I share a common definition of engagement. So we define it as the psychological investment that employees make in the organization. And ultimately, I think it means an opportunity for organizations to capture more potential for their employees and to perform better. I believe increasingly that culture is becoming the de facto sustainable competitive advantage for an organization in this new economy. And so the degree that leadership and HR can elevate engagement and ultimately drive performance is a good thing.
Don, your take on it?
It's very similar. I think of engagement as obviously the psychological investment that employees have in their organization, but there's a fire in people's belly. There are people who just get it and who bring their best on a daily basis, and there are people who just go through the motions. And unfortunately, the scale is tipped toward those people who are going through the motions right now. I think there are things that we can do about it organizationally and through leadership, but far too few organizations are doing that effectively right now.
When we're talking about culture, because culture is a very interesting topic, culture is a feel, a fit, if you want to call it. And then there are individuals that make up that culture, and certainly when you're doing hiring and you're bringing in people, it can change or it can morph or people can adapt to that culture. Ryan, do you see in today's environment where there's certainly been a retrenching back in terms of hiring, and we're doing a lot of temporary staff hiring right now because of the economy, do you see that having an effect on the culture?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, this whole challenging time that's been filled with uncertainty has had a negative impact on culture. It's had a negative impact on employee engagement, and that subsequently, you know, adversely affects culture. So I think it's been a challenge for, you know, leadership to cultivate culture and navigate these times. And it's a challenge. But it also represents an opportunity. And I think organizations, and there are examples, and we can talk through a few, that get it right have a real opportunity to accelerate an advantage and leapfrog the competition. And, you know, as Don referenced, there are very specific things that leaders and organizations can be doing to contribute to it in a positive way.
Don, can you give some examples in terms of things that can be done? We'll certainly get to an overall example maybe of something that has been done, but I'd love to know some of the key areas that you can think about or would like to explain about of what can be done.
Yeah, well, there are a few things that can be done. First of all, it's very important that organizations enable engagement. And what I mean by that is make it possible. So through our research at Modern Survey, we found that there are five things that extraordinary companies do. The first thing that they do is they measure things. They measure things like customer satisfaction, and they measure quality. And they don't stop at the measurement. They actually share the results with employees, and not just the people who are doing the measurement or the department, like a quality department or a customer service department. They share it with all employees to get them involved, to help them be a part of the problem-solving process. Another thing that extraordinary organizations do is they provide performance management or performance appraisals at least annually to employees. And it's surprising how few organizations do that well and adhere to it on an annual basis. They, extraordinary companies, train their employees at least annually. And the last thing that extraordinary organizations do to enable engagement is have a set of values that are known and understood by most employees. Our research has indicated that when values are known and understood by most employees, people are 26 times more likely to be fully engaged. That's an exceptional, exceptional ratio. Now, that's not to say that if you have values, you get full engagement, but I can tell you that when you have the absence of values, it's almost impossible to have full engagement.
And David, this is Ryan. I mean, I think values speak directly to culture. And look, a lot of organizations and a lot of organizations we work with, they have values, vision, mission. And I think the challenge for leadership is how do you get those ideas and that ideology off the wall into the, you know, hearts, minds, attitude, and actions of your employee population. And you do that based around who gets rewarded, you know, who gets promoted, and ultimately, in certain instances, who gets let go. And you have to manage performance that way.
Do you see at the C-suite level, you both travel a lot, certainly do a lot of speaking, do a lot of training and development out there. Do you see at the C-suite level a recognition of the importance of this?
I believe actually it's starting to get recognized in a pretty significant way, and I think that's new. But I think C-level leaders are recognizing that talent and ultimately people strategy is mission critical to, you know, innovation and advancing the business forward. And it's interesting, PricewaterhouseCoopers, they do an annual CEO survey, and it was interesting, 90% of the C-suite leaders surveyed indicated they plan to make significant changes to the HR function over the next 12 to 18 months. And that tells me that they're recognizing that talent and people strategy is a priority. I think taking action on it and exactly what to do about it is a significant challenge for many organizations today, but it's also a huge opportunity specifically for HR to insert themselves and drive change into the business.
And obviously, Ryan and I are going around the country and evangelizing these things, and we want people to pick up on this, you know, talk about values and talk about what the importance of those values are. You know, I'd mentioned that these are things that extraordinary organizations do to enable engagement. If you talk about the C-suite, it's interesting. We've also seen that what drives engagement, what leadership does to drive engagement, to motivate people, has changed. And the thing that we've seen change is that belief in the future of the organization is the top driver of employee engagement. So, you know, all of the research and all of the discussions earlier or from the previous decade in the 90s said engagement is all about the manager. And it was. It was pre-recession. It was very important. You had things like recognition and appreciation being a top driver, or career development, or personal accomplishment, things that are administered and provided by the manager. But post-recession, after 3 or 4 years of insecurity, you know, fear that people are going to lose their jobs, the top driver now is belief in the future of the organization. You can no longer, as a CEO or a member of the C-suite, say, you know what, engagement, we're going to let our managers handle that. It is delivered by senior leadership now. People need to know that they're working for a winner, that they're playing for a winner, that there is a future at their organization, and that's a big, big shift from what we've seen, you know, even 5 years ago.
And you know, this is Ryan. I mean, I think it speaks directly to communication. You know, C-level leaders have to communicate confidently and articulate a clear vision of the future that employees ultimately buy into. And, you know, that's significant. And it's no surprise, given the period of time we've lived through, where people feel very anxious, uncertain about the future. They're being asked to do more with less. They're overwhelmed. They've either lost a job or seen somebody they know affected by this economy. So, you know, this is a time for strong, confident leadership to step forward and communicate and articulate a clear vision about success in the future.
Do you see pockets across the country? In other words, that may be different in the West Coast or the center of the country, or is this a national trend?
It's national, and we have seen some variance by industry. In fact, we, Modern Survey, did research recently on government versus non-government employees, and we found that there's a segment within the government, in particular the government union employees, who are among the least satisfied, least engaged employees in the country. We found that 79% of government union employees are underengaged or disengaged. And if you compare that to the number which is national, 67%. So 67% of the country is underengaged or disengaged. 79% of government union employees are underengaged or disengaged. So huge problem.
And this is Ryan. You know, it is interesting too. I mean, in the work I do, I see pockets of growth. And I did a consulting project in Silicon Valley, and I can tell you, it's interesting in a time where there's an unemployment crisis in certain markets and industries. There's also a skill shortage concurrently. And, if you spend time out in Silicon Valley with some of the high-tech companies, that are driving change and, the whole 2.0 initiative, they're really competing aggressively for engineering talent and technical talent. And, it feels like, a whole different environment. So, there are pockets of opportunity, and there are organizations that are playing offense and looking to advance their position and innovate and grow. I think that's part of what makes this interesting and exciting.
And two other industries that we've found have rebounded significantly are financial services and heavy manufacturing. And heavy manufacturing is an interesting one because they were decimated during the recession, but they've rebounded, and they're full engagement levels are about twice the national average. For financial services, they have about 60% more fully engaged employees than the national average. So those two industries that were hurt very dramatically during the recession have rebounded in terms of the commitment of their employees. And I think part of the problem might have been, or part of the reason might have been, that they were so hurt during the recession, and now they see that there's light at the end of the tunnel, or things that are much, much better, and there is hope, and there is that confidence in their organization and confidence in their industry.
We both agree there are pockets of enormous opportunity.
Do you see that successful companies are clearly looking at specific things that they can do to help fix this problem, or at least know about it or understand how they can go about it?
Well, absolutely. I think successful companies are invested and are very focused, and they're putting people strategy first, and they're focused on leadership and investing and training in their people, and they're communicating clearly a vision of success for the future. They're rallying people around values. They're selecting the right people into their organization, and they're building emotional commitment and confidence. So absolutely, successful companies are committed to this. And this is an interesting time, and this is something that we talk about, where increasingly in business today, a lot of the products and services that we sell, a lot of the functions in our business are being what I call commoditized, where increasingly it's hard to sustain a long-term competitive advantage on markets or financial strategy or technology. Increasingly what's going to sustain and help a business grow and thrive is the people strategy. And I think organizations, successful organizations, are increasingly recognizing that and resourcing against it.
Do you think that this online, if you want to call it, trend of more training, more development, more coaching from an online process rather than one-on-one, which we're seeing across the country, is good, is bad, or does it matter?
I think it's good. I think giving people access to resources and information on the web is beneficial. I always think it's beneficial to make your business more social and to leverage technology the right way. But increasingly, I'll also tell you that you can't automate relationships. And I think one-on-one relationships, coaching, FaceTime, feedback, there's still such critical elements to leadership. And I know in my own training practice, and we do online learning and we do live events, that the impact, the emotional impact you can have from a live event versus automated online training is different. And I think they both are useful, they both serve a role, and they're both important.
And I would just add to that, you know, you cannot confuse activity with effectiveness. And just because somebody is involved in an online training or something of that nature doesn't mean that, you know, to Ryan's point, that they're getting the same level of effectiveness or a level of quality that they might have otherwise. So if you're trying to placate employees by saying, you know, we gave you this online training, and don't be confused or don't think that you're going to get the same results as a result of somebody going through it.
And we're here with Ryan Estes and Don McPherson, and we'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hey, y'all, this is Stephen Cochran. As a country artist, I have traveled around this great country of ours, often meeting our brave men and women in uniform. And as a Marine and veteran of both the Iraq and Afghan conflict, I know how important it is to thank our troops who defend our freedom each and every day. One of the best ways to thank them is to give their children and spouses the gift of education. Scholarships for 2 years, 4 years, and vocational school. This is exactly what a national charity, Thanks USA, does. Please go to their website, www.thanksusa.org, to make a generous donation to the Thanks USA Scholarship Fund for the families of the troops, and I thank you.
And we're back with Ryan and Don. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thanks for having us, David.
You know, we've been talking a lot about employee engagement, and I think that this leads to an obvious question. What's a healthy culture? What is it? What does it really mean, and why does it matter?
I think a healthy culture is a place where people want to be, a place where they want to hang their hat and reside or work for a long time. And why it matters is retention. It allows people to bring their best on a regular basis. I think the biggest problem when people are thinking about culture is, you know, we see this with people we're working with CEOs. A lot of times they think, well, you know, if we're going to engage our employees, well, let's put a program into place. And they think that they're going to see results in 6 months or a year. And I think that is very, very myopic. People who are committed to changing the culture have to realize it's going to be a 5-year. It's going to be a 10-year initiative. Positive cultures, strong cultures are built over time, and there's a commitment and a dedication to that that can't be replaced. Now, on the opposite end of things, a negative culture can be created in a minute. It can be created in a very, very short time, and I think there are examples of that. Historically, we can look at Enron, where things fell apart very, very quickly. Another example very recently is Penn State, where, you know, Joe Paterno had built an institution there over decades, and it was very well respected around the country from football people and non-football people alike as a place where excellence was pursued, and in a very short amount of time, just months, the entire thing crumbled. His legacy was dissolved. And I think people have to understand how delicate culture is and how long it takes to create.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite clients, the client I do a lot of work with, they actually describe their culture as an ecosystem, and it's very delicate. And part of the leadership responsibility is to protect the delicate nature of that ecosystem at all costs, because as Don alluded to, you know, you can destroy the fabric of a culture quickly. And, you know, that's very true for a large business or an institution, and it's very small, true for a small business. I mean, in a small company, and, you know, Don and I run small companies, you know, a couple of bad hires can really challenge and erode the culture. And I'll share with you, you know, you asked the characteristics of a positive culture. I think one that I seek frequently is a sense of shared or common purpose, that I'm contributing meaningful work to something that is larger than myself, that the people I work with believe in as passionately as I do. And in that type of environment, it's interesting. Conflict becomes something that's healthy. It's not adversarial because, you know, the work drives us in this common way. And I think to have a healthy culture, you have to have a high degree of trust. Employees trust senior leadership, they trust leadership and management, and they trust each other. And the strong cultures that I work with, it's not necessarily about what you're doing, you know, what you're making or your functional role, but oftentimes it's about how you work and who you work with. And I see those as some of the common characteristics of a strong, positive, high trust, purpose-oriented culture.
And there's no question that that drives an organization only to excel, not only operationally, but in all elements of the business. And there's no question that that's a key motivator for people to stay at a company. And with retention being a key place that we have to deal with in the next few, you know, next few years, I think that this is a critical topic. And you guys have really done a great job talking about it. Now, Don, I know you do some speaking out there for Modern Survey. Tell me a little bit about what's coming up for you on the docket.
Well, I've got a few things coming up. In October, I am going to Alaska, and I'm going to be speaking up there at a Society for Human Resource Management conference. I'm going to be at Garden State SHRM, so that's also a Society for Human Resource Management conference in New Jersey in October. And Ryan and I are actually partnering for the Strategic HR New England conference, which is October 28th through the 30th. In Bretton Woods, New Hampshire. So that's very exciting for us. And then I'm going to take a couple of months off, November and December, and then I resume with a number of keynote speeches starting in January and February.
Well, we're very proud to have as a sponsor of this show the MaineHR.com, which is certainly the organization that puts on that New Hampshire Strategic Conference. So we're very happy about that. Matter of fact, I will be there, and I'm looking forward to seeing both of you there. So that's great. Now, you know, Ryan, one of the things I noticed on your bio, and of course we all know this, and for those who don't know, that you've done a lot of speaking alongside like Tony Robbins, Bill Gates, some big speakers out there. What's it been like, and what do you have coming up? Any more speeches with them?
Nothing with Tony or Bill coming up, but I've got a jam-packed fall. I run a training and development company, and so I do a lot of keynote speaking. That's my core business. And we've got I'd say somewhere between 15 and 20 events planned for September and October. So it's going to be a busy fall season, but I am thoroughly excited to have an opportunity to return to Maine and be part of the Strategic HR Conference. It's a fantastic HR community, a progressive HR community, and it's an outstanding panel of thought leaders that are going to be contributing content over the course of a couple of days. So I'm excited about it. And for any of your listeners that want to connect with me prior, they can always check out my blog at passiononpurposeblog.com, where we're talking about leadership, culture, and the future of work.
Well, we'll certainly let them know that, as well as, you know, one of the things is they can go to HR Power Hour, and we will have your information up there where they can click on and get directly to both your sites. I think that's important for both of you, because I think this has been a great topic today. I appreciate so much of your time for both of you, and thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, David.
And we'll be back.